welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to today's Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast with the Federalist Society. My name is Elizabeth Dickinson, and I'm an assistant director with the Regulatory Transparency Project. As a reminder, all opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not of the Federalist Society. Today, we will be discussing the latest updates in AI policy. We're excited to have with us two great legal experts, Kevin Frazier, an AI Innovation and Law Fellow with the UT Austin Law School, and Aram Gavoor, the Associate Dean for Academic Affairs at the George Washington University Law School. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Libby.
Thank you.
All right, Aram, it's always so much fun to have my go-to AI analyst on the RTP Fourth Branch podcast. Today, we have so much to dive into. Two new crucial AI directives from the White House, both announced on April 7th. And these policies set new requirements for promoting AI adoption and innovation among federal agencies, managing related risks, and ensuring AI use aligns with core American values and norms. We have so much to break down, but before we get into the nitty-gritty, Aram, why now? Why did these policies come out at this point in time? Regular listeners will know we have the AI action plan that's due at the end of July. So why in the middle of April, kind of amid a lot of other events going on, do you think the White House chose this moment to announce these two policies?
Well, AI is a crucial element to this administration's, the Trump administration's technological, national competitiveness, national security goals. And the president's been quite clear and direct about that. These policies, M25-22, which are known as M memos from the Office of Management and Budget, are promulgated in furtherance of the president's Executive Order 14179, which was a day three executive order titled Removing Barriers to American Leadership in Artificial Intelligence, and actually a number of other related policies and statements.
And looking at these policies, can you help us set the stage a little bit for how is this a marked transition from AI adoption and AI use under the Biden administration? What is the pivot occurring here? We heard in the fact sheet detailing these two policies, they describe this transition as one from a risk-averse approach under the Biden administration to a new forward-leaning, pro-innovation, pro-competition mindset. So can you detail a little bit more? What did AI adoption look like under the Biden administration?
So AI adoption policy was different, distinctly different in the Biden administration, whereas the Biden administration built upon Trump 45 and President Trump's Executive Order 13960 with the AI Bill of Rights from 2022, Executive Order 14110, 2023, and the AI National Security Memorandum in 2024. The big distinguishing difference in the Biden administration was that that administration viewed AI as a mechanism to advance further civil rights in the view of the Biden administration, Democratic Party, and to engage in social change. So it was viewed as a tool of advancement, but also a tool of the so-described equity. And the big difference with the Trump administration is to remove that element from AI adoption, have fewer breaks associated with it, and with the intended goal to be the development of AI for its operational purpose and for its technological purpose.
And staying at a 30,000 foot level for just a second longer, do you think it's an accurate characterization to frame this a little bit as the Biden administration saw AI as government with AI, right? It was just using AI as another tool, as if it were Google or a spreadsheet or what have you, just kind of augmenting existing government services and systems with AI. Whereas now we're seeing, speaking on April 9th, just in the wake of an announcement that the federal government will now be using AI for the first time to assist with federal employee record keeping, can we now say the Trump administration is introducing a period of government by AI, where we're actually seeing full-on AI use cases to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the government? Is that a kind of useful dichotomy, government with AI versus government by AI?
I think to a degree, yes. So to distinguish between the administrations and to draw a through line, one of the factors to consider is the advance in the march of the technology itself, right? So in one respect, we don't want to be unfair or throw spitballs one way or another. When the underlying technology at the beginning of the Biden administration did not include, you know, ChatGPT and Claude and Llama at the level in which it operates now. So that's one point. The second point is, and this is really where I'm agreeing with your position, is that the Trump administration has really leaned in to engage in technological transformation of how government runs to align with other policies. So reducing the footprint of the federal worker, as opposed to upscaling as a philosophy in the Biden administration, which was much more incrementalist and fewer steps with greater thought in between the steps or greater planning. And then also in this administration, the Trump administration, there's a number of different policies that centralize decision-making, policy-making within the White House. And AI is a fantastic mechanism to help to effectuate that. So this one executive order that I referenced is one of many presidential actions and vice presidential actions that lead us to this point. And I'm happy to go through a number of the different mosaic data points so that our listeners can see how this fits in within the big picture of Trump 2.0.
Let's set that scene just a little bit, because we've heard, for example, Vice President Vance go to Paris and shake up the EU by specifying that this wasn't a time for AI safety, this was a time for AI opportunity. And then again at the American Dynamism Summit, Vice President Vance said, this is going to be a era of AI dominance in the US. So when folks see, okay, two policies from OMB, this seems like maybe small potatoes to some people. Why is this a matter that people should be paying attention to when we think about filling out the broader Trump AI agenda?
Because this is the implementation at the rank and file government level and to the interagency level in a way. These MMOs are typically implementation memos of other policy. An MMO is itself not a spontaneous announcement of policy unless it's within an authority of the Office of Management and Budget, like the Paperwork Reduction Act or the Privacy Act of 1974. So you're right. The Vice President on February 11th gave speech at the French AI Summit. That summit was billed as an AI safety summit. And right after the election in early December, it sort of stealth was rebilled as sort of like a pro-business summit. And the vice president focused on saying that the message was the AI future will not be won by hand-wringing about safety. And then in his Munich speech the following week on the 18th, he really emphasized the great game nature of this. And then the president, now we're focusing on presidential policy, writing a public letter to Michael Kratsios, the director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, laying out, you know, three big key questions that he wanted answered. Question one, how can the United States secure its position as an unrivaled world leader in critical and emerging technologies? No surprise, what is the first example of several technologies? AI, followed by quantum information science, which in part drives AI. And then third, nuclear technology. So we can sort of shear off the nuclear tech. You can go on the news and see the B-61-13 bomb by the National Nuclear Security Administration that was fast-tracked. That was just sort of publicized yesterday. Right after, it was also publicized that there's a large collection of B-2 stealth bombers in San Diego with saber-rattling in the Middle East. But again, the AI and then quantum as an explicit separate directive to Mr. Kratsios. In addition to that, there is a crypto and AI czar that the president announced at the beginning of the term, David Sacks. It seems like he's focusing more on the crypto piece of it, just because if we're looking at the memo fact sheet, the reference is to Mr. Kratsios from Mr. Vogt, Russ Vogt, who's the director of the Office of Management and Budget.
And now getting into the weeds, we have M2521 promoting rapid and responsible AI adoption. So what are some of the key provisions in this memo when it comes to accelerating adoption of AI by federal agencies, and what aspects of it do you want to call attention to? Maybe we'll start with this role of chief AI officers. What were chief AI officers doing under the Biden administration, and what's the new charge they face under this memo?
Yeah, so let me react to that first. When we did our last pod on this on a different platform, my prediction was based on the campaign rhetoric that the Trump administration would tear out, root and stem everything that the Biden administration did, because that's what the rhetoric was. To the contrary, and I think actually to the compliment of the administration, they kept the things that were useful, which is, of course, always good policy to keep what's useful. And they kept that chief AI officer function, which was introduced by the Biden administration. They kept the AI councils, at least at the agency level. They kept that intact. There's different goals and there's different priorities for those people. But for purposes of making sure that there wasn't too much of a shock in the AI infrastructure, because it's the same people, right? It's like the same employees. If you're on AI policy from one administration, you're likely to remain on AI policy as a career government official in the next administration, and you're already somewhat organized. So the huge difference is the removal of utilizing AI as a function of social change in the context of the civil rightsification in excess of what the law requires. So the Trump administration, quite predictably, cares about civil rights as it is required in laws that are on the books. Discrimination on laws that are on the books, complying with the Constitution as it is understood today, and now using AI to engage in some new level of policy making or to advance an equity interest. So that's a huge difference. That's like the biggest tectonic difference between them all. And then there's also sort of a supercharge, as you described, as you were implying, Kevin, with regard to the interoperable implementation of AI, use cases, information sharing, getting rid of the siloing. We saw a lot of that, you know, laid out in a broader sense in the 2024 National Security Memorandum on, what is it, October 30th, the National War College, the Naval War College. And but the other elephant in the room is DOGE, right? So there's a bunch of other executive orders that are referencing DOGE gaining access to systems, connecting systems. You see rhetoric and statements from Elon Musk saying, well, for fraud detection in, you know, Social Security Administration. You have a number of different standalone legacy systems in the tech stack that aren't talking to each other. Now they are. So with all of this networking of all of these government databases, legacy, and all of these different agencies, at some cost, right? Like you're seeing a lot of resignations, like the IRS acting commissioner resigned based on the data sharing agreement between Immigration Customs Enforcement and DHS and IRS for purposes of effectuating immigration enforcement. You had Treasury change in leadership and the Department of Treasury's payment systems leadership. But given that all of this is happening, then having an affirmative policy of AI implementation and adoption in interaction really is going to strengthen White House policymaking. It's going to make it more efficient, and it's also going to cut down on a lot of the human delay associated with presidential policymaking, with like the sub PCC, PCC, deputies committee, principals committee processes, because there'll be fewer homework assignments. Now the policymaking entities within the White House can just get the information instantaneously.
Who is ever opposed to less homework? I got to say, my students love when I assign less work. So good news all around there. And I think what's really stood out to me was some of the larger framing of this document and of these policies. So now this idea of the chief AI officers within each agency serving as, quote, change agents and AI advocates. And that change in mentality of not just being kind of good folks to go to, good resources for answering AI-related questions for that agency, but actually championing how is this agency going to leverage AI to improve services, to improve systems, is a whole different mentality. And with that in mind, I wonder if you can speak to the significance also of, as a result of these policies, we're now seeing that rather than have a bespoke AI-specific approval process, so saying, you know, this agency needs to go through these stakeholders to say, yes, we can use AI in that use case. Now, under M2521, accountability processes, approval processes for AI is treated like any other government IT process. What does that mean on the ground? How is that going to change how agencies actually build AI into their various functions?
So it'll function as sort of like a red tape clearing. And to be very clear, the Trump administration is indeed concerned with bad use cases of AI. It's styled now as high impact. And again, it's based on existing law as it is understood currently, and not an idealized version of a future state of law, which is or like a common law that the Biden administration was endeavoring to develop.
I and also just to pause there for a second. Can you give us one or two examples of what's a high impact use of AI? What does that actually look like?
All right. So this is laid out in section 4 of M2521, which really begins in earnest on page 14. And there's a layout of determining high impact AI. So this relates to AI that has an output that serves as a principal basis for decisions or actions that have a legal, material binding, or significant effect on rights or safety. So let's unpack that. That is remarkable in the sense that you have some carryover from the prior administration. It's not root and stem, to the credit, you know, of the Trump administration. And it is unsurprising in many respects because those three features relate that we can draw those out. So legal or material binding sort of touches on the ley lines of regulatory law, administrative law. If an AI is making adjudications, that's something that principal officers need to know about, because that can lead to all kinds of rabbit hole problems at the back end with regard to Article 3 judicial review, you know, if a bot decided something and it's unexplainable, or sometimes some decisions must be made by a person. Some things are non-delegable. And then there's other questions of to what degree can a secretary delegate generalized statutory authority to a bot? Something like that. And then, of course, there's the safety component or the rights component. So certainly, I think no one is interested in sort of dystopian decision making, you know, like for purposes of like detention determinations for persons held, you know, in criminal custody based on an algorithm, or like physical safety, right? Like sending in some probe on a drone to like inspect a mine can be useful, provided that, you know, the human operator is ultimately making the decision and it's not just some algorithm that is, you know, networked to the drone that just flies into a mine. So I'm just giving you those examples. That makes sense. And then drawing very quickly to, you made a point, like who would be against, you know, more homework. Keep in mind, there's always a bit of a trade-off. If you're having instantaneous information with systems that, of course, have some risk of confabulation, or certainly data that requires a narrative to understand the nuance, that typically involves a human actor. And there's only so many human actors that the EEOB can sort of have. You know, you have the White House overseeing a multi-million person federal executive branch. And you really, it's impossible to fully consolidate to like 500 or so, like all of that narrative knowledge, historical knowledge, that might be missing from, you know, the interoperability and the accessibility of government databases at a fingertip.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's fascinating to see some additional carryovers, such as the continuation of inventorying AI use practices, AI use cases by the various agencies, making sure we're actively tracking who's using AI for what. That's a carryover from the prior administration. Also having minimum risk management practices be adhered to by each agency. There's also a insistence on various testing and assessment requirements, as well as some transparency measures as well. So on the whole, Aram, looking at this first memo, do you think we're going to see an explosion of AI adoption by the agencies? Is it going to be a trickle? What can we expect? Are we going to wake up next week and all of a sudden every agency is deploying AI in different contexts? Or what's that pace going to look like, do you think?
So certainly in the first month of the administration, where certainly we've seen DOGE is acutely active, it looks like the explosion side, right? There's every single time you have some, like to the point where there was a couple weeks, and you know, you can blame the news cycle for that too, is that every time there was like a networking of some standalone significant database, that was a news story itself, in part because of the associated career official resistance to some of that, in part, of course, associated with you know, very rapid rifts or woodshedding, you know, that's or sort of woodchippering. That's the term that Elon used on X with regard to USAID. So that's happening. It's happening a lot. Undoubtedly, DOGE has a large workflow and that's moving quickly. So I would say so long as the DOGE capabilities remain and continue to be adopted and applied, you're going to see much more of this. Your example that you gave of the simple digitization, like you said AI, but it's a simple digitization of paper documents that are kept in a very large cave, like literally a cave in Pennsylvania for government retirees. I could say personally, you know, like I've spent 14, 15 years in the Justice Department. I wouldn't want my personnel records to like be at risk of like physical deletion if like the cave caved in. That would just be so weird. Of course, I want my information to be accessible electronically. But for example, the use of AI to help affect the digitization process is essentially taking like 2005 tech, which is frankly like a scanner with like a decent OCR rate, like above like 90%. And then to fill in some of the blanks and then to categorize it so it doesn't have to be so manual. It can just be so really, really quick because most of the government forms have OMB control numbers on them so they can very easily be categorized. So and that's where you're going to start seeing like a lot of serious permanent transformative change to sort of get us out of like pre-2000s practices that are just sort of based on inertia. There's so many databases. I remember when I was in government representing various agencies, some of them like were run on like DOS and you'd have to like quote literally the term is like fire up the database if it's a legacy database. You know, and if we had to produce it in the context of litigation, you'd have to produce it in the format of a hard drive so that there was software to run the database because the software didn't exist besides the database itself. So seeing what you're describing is actually the private sectorization best practices of AI policy. So it's like, don't do dumb things, you know, test, don't use it for use cases that are problematic. That creates a greater alignment between government functionality and use of AI and the private sector, which will then help to accelerate adoption without like long back and forth memos and deep discussions.
And one of the reasons I think folks who are generally supportive of the diffusion of AI and access to AI should be paying attention to this is a huge opportunity if it goes right, if we see this adoption go well, to improve not only public trust in AI and public adoption of AI, but also public appreciation for the government functioning. As you pointed out, Aram, if you have a government that's stuck in 2005, it's still watching the first Shrek, you're going to be upset, right? When you see that everyone else, all of your other interactions are efficient, are timely, are quick. So we need government to be acting in the same way if we want folks to have that sort of trust that their government can act effectively and respond to pressing issues. So it'll be very fascinating to see how the federal government kind of setting a standard of adoption can lead to a trickle down of state governments, of local governments, then being able to adopt AI. But before we dive even further into some hypothetical scenarios, let's turn to the second policy here. And this policy focuses on procurement. And procurement is probably the least sexy term that anyone has ever used on a podcast. Please, listener, don't immediately turn to that next pod in your queue. Procurement, why does it matter, Aram? And what's the significant changes we're seeing as a result of this memo?
Sure. So keep in mind, at GW Law, we have the number one public procurement program in the world. So I'm like a junior varsity player in that.
We'll promote you to varsity. We'll give you a varsity.
I'm really solid on the AI stuff, on the procurement. Like, I know enough to like talk about it. Let me break this down for you. So first is the effective date of this particular memorandum is a little bit further down the road. It's in October. M2522 replaces M2418, which the Biden administration in its twilight days issued. I think it was like November or December. What are the things that it does? Its goals are to ensure the government and the public benefit from competitive AI marketplace. So whereas in the Biden administration, there was a greater willingness for prioritization of the largest, biggest models, which in procurement speech gives a higher risk of lock-in, right? So, you know, the Biden administration adopted, I would say, a rather consistent philosophy, you know, like, for example, like the F-47 warplane, you know, that President Trump authorized, which is essentially like the F-22 replacement. You can't have like four different providers, you know, of the most advanced, you know, like stealth plane out there. You have to pick one. And you know, those are the things that are happening in that space. So the shift here is there's a greater emphasis on free market competition, and then also safeguarding taxpayer dollars by tracking AI performance and managing risk. So emphasizing the tracking AI performance component of this, right? The managing risk, you know, the Biden administration was all over that. They had a starkly very, very heavy sort of risk-averse approach to AI that was a little bit more elastic on the national security memorandum, sort of using like my, you know, fighter craft example for national security purposes. And then the third big principle for M2522, which is this administration's big M memo to replace M2418, is promoting AI effective acquisition with cross-functional engagement. So that's something that the Biden administration was onto. I think the Trump administration takes it a step further, to the point where the Trump administration's, one of its big policies is like procurement reform outright. And that sort of ties into doji things, right? So you have this like long list of, you know, fraud, waste, abuse, so described spends that are on procurement. So I think that that ties in as well.
And I think this change is so important, mandating not only to facilitate competition in the space, but to buy American, right? American AI is going to receive a preference. Also, there's a preference for interoperable AI systems, which is incredibly important as well, because Aram, as you pointed out, concerns about vendor lock-in have always been existent, right? If you're stuck going to that same vendor time and again, you have way too long of a contract, you may be missing out on the next best tech. And as we know in the AI space, the next best tech changes seemingly every week. And so if we're not giving agencies an opportunity to integrate the latest technology and move on from maybe that older system, then we could see the federal government falling behind. So I think that's another strategic and smart play by the administration.
Yeah, that's right. And then tying this to M2521, which was the AI M memo, there's a specific carve out, just like there was in the Biden administration for M2410, for national security. So we should expect sort of like a national security memorandum 2.0 Trump edition to replace the Biden executive order 14110 national security memorandum, you know, that was issued the 30 October 2024. And also getting to your point on the procurement M memo, again, I want to compliment the Trump administration for not just, you know, building from scratch a new policy. They built from scratch a policy taking into account the aspects that were functional and useful for Trump administration interests. So there is Venn diagram crossover, you know, from the Biden administration. So there, it's not like a complete waste of time, you know, that the Biden administration engaged in for these work products, because there's, you know, good general policy in there. And then, of course, there's starkly divergent, you know, policy choices for which you're going to have a entirely expected we're going this different direction approach.
Well, Aram, before we let you get back to your myriad responsibilities, what does this suggest for the Trump administration's AI policy going forward? Does this give you any insights to what we may expect from the AI action plan due in late July? Or what do you think we'll see next from the administration? Or what should we take away from these policies?
Sure. So I guess another big point for the M2522 before fully zooming out, or maybe as part of the zoom out, is that you already saw policies generally on procurement to empower the GSA, General Services Administration, to have greater centralization of policymaking, and also to be a choke point or at least an access point for general sort of like commercial off the shelf, like generally available products. as opposed to the prior model for like time immemorial, which is an optionality to use GSA, or if you want to buy your pencils, you know, the Department of Defense can buy its own pencils under its own procurement strategy. But part of that GSA sort of initial step change in the executive order from last week or 2 weeks ago was a general policy viewpoint that procurement itself needs to change. So I would anticipate seeing GSA having more power, more centralized authority to essentially be like a gatekeeper from which a lot of these things can flow. So I would note that. And then I would also note that all of these policies work in harmony with each other for the general principle that I would say, unlike the Biden administration, where there was a don't worry, you won't lose your job, we're going to upscale you approach, there is an intentional reducing footprint goal of the Trump administration for which AI plays a central part of making, you know, enabling part. Like, so those are very, very big differences. So the more agencies are focusing on RIPs, the more they will correspondingly need to rely on tech, hopefully with not too much of a lag time, to be able to make up for the diminution in human resources. And I think so long as DOGE remains active, I know there's a lot of news media coverage on whether the special government official, you know, employee SGE status of Elon will extend beyond 130 days or so. That's coming up in like late May. That's the other sort of element in this mix.
Well, lots to keep track of. And Aram, there's no doubt that we'll be talking AI again sooner rather than later. But for now, we'll leave it there. And thank you again, Libby, for having us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you both so much, Kevin and Aram, for joining us today for that great conversation. Thank you also to our audience for tuning in today. And if you're interested in learning more about all of our programming here at RTP, discussing the regulatory state and the American way of life, please visit our website at regproject.org. That is regproject.org. Thank you.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.